Okay, tonight's shiur is a chus, refu shalem, if Chana Mendel bas Frida, she should have refu shalem immediately. This week, we read another double parasha as we had in the last few weeks. We had Tazriya Metzora, we had Achrei Kedoshim, and this week we have Bahar Bechukosai. Whenever we have a double parasha, the reason why Chazal decided these two parashas should be read together is because there's a connection between the two parashas. Otherwise, we will not put two parashas together just for convenience. We know the reason that there are double parashas is because we have to finish the Torah in 1 year, and being that there are 54 weeks, there are 54 parashas, but there are many Shabbosos that we don't read from the Torah the parasha of the week because it's Yom Tov. So we lose out a few weeks here and there, and therefore we have the double parashiyos. In a leap year, for example, like next year, there will be no double parashiyos, except one perhaps, because we have an extra month, so we can afford to separate the parashiyos and read them individually. However, the double parashiyos that we have are exact, that it's these two, and not, let's say, B'chukosei and Bamidbar, or Noyach and Lech Lecha. The fact that we put the parashios, the double parashios, like for example, Vayakel Pekuda, Tazriya Metzoras, because these are related. And the theme, the commonality between these two parashios is very obvious in that they both discuss the laws of Shemitah. They both discuss how to observe Shemitah and Yovel, which Yovel is also like Shemitah in certain ways. Every 7 years there's a Shemitah, every 50 years there's a Yovel. In Parshas Bahar, we learn the basic halachas, what is required of us during a sabbatical year, during the Jubilee year, which is Shemitah and Yovel, what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do, and what happens to those who fail to observe these halachas properly. And the Torah discusses here Yerida, a downfall, and this downfall becomes a sevenfold downfall of an individual who desires money, and because of that he can't observe the laws of Shemitah, it's too tempting. He doesn't observe the laws, and eventually he ends up selling his field, and then we discuss later in the parasha about this individual or another individual, but in the same vein, ends up selling his home, and then later he sells himself into slavery, first to a Jew, and then at the end of the parasha we talk about a Jew who sells himself to a non-Jew, and that it is incumbent upon us to redeem him. And Rashi comments at the end of the parasha that these are all related. The reason why all these topics are discussed is because we're talking here about someone who did not observe the laws of Shemitah, and if someone is chashud on Shavuot, he's accused as of violating the Shemitah laws, the end is he's going to end up selling his movable objects, which is also discussed in this parasha, v'chisim k'rumim k'olam yisecha, and then, if that doesn't help, and he doesn't do tshuva, he'll end up selling his field, and then his house, then he's going to lend money and have to pay back with interest, and then at the end he's going to sell himself, not only to a Jew, but then eventually to a Goy. So in the parasha here, we see a clear theme. We see clearly that the parasha is discussing what happens to a person who doesn't observe the Shemitah laws. And this continues in the next parasha. The next parasha, B'chukosai, is famous for what we call the Teichacha. It has in it the psukim that in most shuls they read very quickly and very low. The Baal Kaira reads it that way because we sort of want to get rid of these klolos, and as the Gemara says, we read this before Rosh Hashanah and before Shavuos, Tichla Shana uklolo yiseha, Tochel Shana ubircha yiseha. That the purpose of reading the Teichacha before Rosh Hashanah and now before Shavuos is that we want to end the curses, get rid of the curses, let it pass, let it just be history, and start anew, and begin now a new year of bracha. Question is, why now? This is not the new year. The new year is before Rosh Hashanah. So the Gemara says that Shavuos is also considered Rosh Hashanah. It's the Rosh Hashanah for the fruits. For Peiros Ha'ilan, the Mishnah says, in fact, in this week's parasha, in B'chukosai, it says, V'eith tasode yitain piryoi. The Teichacha in Parshas B'chukosai has in it 49 klolos. We see in both parshas the number 7 and 7 times 7. We see 7 in Bahar because the Torah talks to us about the individual who doesn't keep the Shemitah, and eventually that leads to one downfall and another until eventually he sells himself into slavery and then to a Goy. We have 7 consecutive downfalls. And in the next parasha that we read this week, the two become one, but the next parasha, B'chukosai, we have 49 curses in the Teichacha, as Rashi tells us in a different parasha, that there are mem tes klolis. There are 49 curses, 49 admonishings, Teichachas, corresponding to the 49 days of Sfira. We always read this during the 49 days of Sfira. And every day that we count, and it's not just counting, but every day that we do what is required of us during Sfira, we remove another curse. And the Sfira is also in sevens. There are seven times seven. 7 weeks, 7 days to each week, seven times seven, until we come to the 50th day. And so too we learn in Parashas Behar, V'safarta l'cho sheva shapsois shonim, sheva shonim, sheva apam. You are to count seven consecutive Shemitah cycles. And after that, after counting Teisha v'arboim shana, exactly like what we do now, we count 49 days, then they counted 49 years, the 50th year is the Yovel year, when Shofar was blown, v'havarta Shofar through abachodesh hashvi be'osra lachodesh, all slaves were free. Yovel hitihi elochem, akrosem d'ror ba'oretz, v'shaftam ishal achuzos, everyone returns to their original status, v'ishal mishpachtoi toshuvu, slaves are emancipated, fields return to their owners. That's the Yovel year. And that's what Shavuos is. What Yovel is in years, Shavuos is in days. And just as in the Yovel year, everyone returns to their roots, everyone goes home, that's what Yovel is, based on a pasuk in the Haftorah in this week's parasha, as the Ramban says, Al Yuval Yishalach Shorosha, from this week's Haftorah, from Yirmiyah Tazayim, a Yuval is a spring, a wellspring. A tree that is planted next to a wellspring, its roots blossom, its roots grow, and the tree grows very well, rather than if the tree is further away from the source, which is the spring. The other meaning of Yovel is the ram's horn. In fact, the first time it ever says Yovel in the Torah is by Shavuos. What we read Shavuos morning, the first day of Shavuos, the pasuk says, "B'mshoich ha-yovel heima yalu bahar." The Yovel is the ram's horn, and Rashi tells us there, Pshutai Shel Mikra, Rashi says, it's the literal understanding of the Pasuk. What ram horn are we talking about? Hashem is the one who blew it, and we're talking about the ram that was substituted for Yitzchak by the Akedah, and Hashem uses the left horn of that ram to usher in Matan Torah. We are waiting, of course, for the right horn to be blown, the Shofar Gadol, to Kabe Shofar Gadol L'Cheruzenu, when Yitok Abba Shofar Gadol Ubo Ha'ivdim Be'eretz Ashur, in the future, the Yovel that we're waiting for, the Matan Torah that we are waiting for, that Mashiach will reveal the hidden part of the Torah, the secrets of the Torah, when the Shofar Gadol will be blown, and all of us and the entire world will return to its roots, to its source. So we read these two parashiyos, Behar v'Chukos, always during the Yemei HaSfira, and both of the parashiyos are talking about Shemitah and Yovel, because the Teichacha, as Rashi quotes here in the parasha, is also a punishment for the lack of, actually the pasuk says it straight out, Rashi elaborates, is from the lack of observance of Shemitah. Os tirtze ha'oretz es Shabbos o'iseha, koil yemei ha'shama v'atem v'eretz o'ivechem. That after the Teichacha, after the unfortunate tragedies that have occurred, and this is all in the past, that's already happened, this is what happened during Churban Bayis Rishon, and Rashi tells us the whole account, how many Shemitahs and Yovels that they didn't observe, and as a result of that, they were exiled, and they had to go through the Teichacha. So the Teichacha is a punishment for the lack of observance of Shemitah. Obviously, if Shemitah is so great, and the severity of violating the Shemitah is so terrible, that the punishment is golus, va'avadetem ba'goyim, as we read in the Mishnah, in this week's Pirkei Avos, the Mishnah tells us that Shemitah is one of those averus that results in golus, the lack of observance of the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, bring about Golus. Obviously the observance of Shemitah and Yovel on the good side brings about Geula. Now Rashi at the beginning of the parasha asks, when the parasha begins, Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe behar Sinai, Rashi asks, Ma inyan Shemitah etzel har Sinai? Why only Shemitah? Every mitzvah was said at har Sinai. Why all of a sudden is the Torah revealing to us that Hashem spoke to Moshe on har Sinai? We know that since we've been learning Chumash, since Parashas Yisro already, the entire Torah was taught at har Sinai. In fact, B'nai Yisrael was still at Har Sinai. They didn't leave Har Sinai until actually today, Chaf Iyar, which is today's date. Tomorrow is Chaf Aleph, and today was Chaf Iyar. That's the day that we read in Parashas Baha'u'llah that the Jews left Har Sinai for the first time. They were at Har Sinai for a year minus 10 days. They came to Har Sinai on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, as we read in Parashas Yisrael, at the beginning, the first pasuk, what we're going to be reading Shavuos morning, Ba'chodesh Hashlishi L'tzayis B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim Ba'yoyim Hazeh Bo'u Midbar Sinai. And they left Har Sinai almost a year later. So they've been at Har Sinai, and they still are when we come to this parasha. Why is this parasha begin? Why does this parasha start by Dabar Hashem al Moshe Behar Sinai? We know all the mitzvahs were said on Har Sinai. And why particularly Shemitah are we stressing that it was said by Har Sinai? And Rashi says to teach us that just like Shemitah was said with all its details, Kloloiseha, Vidiktukeha, Upratoiseha, at Har Sinai, because we don't find that it's repeated later. So obviously it was all said at Har Sinai, even though we know that all the mitzvahs were repeated later on. But Arva Ismayav, that teaches us that all mitzvahs too were taught with all the details. Every part of every mitzvah was taught at Har Sinai and then later again repeated. The question is, why did the Torah choose Shemitah to be the mitzvah to teach us that every mitzvah was taught in all its details on Har Sinai? And that is because Shemitah and Yovel, which Shemitah and Yovel go together, we see the Yovel year follows the seventh Shemitah. Shemitah and Yovel require a tremendous amount of emunah and betachin. Obviously, in order to be able to observe this mitzvah, one has to have a very high level of faith. You tell people not to farm, not to cultivate their land for an entire year, no planting, no plowing. It sounds so outrageous that the Torah itself mentions the question that everyone's going to have. The Chisoimru, Ma Noichal Bashana Hashvius. The Torah doesn't usually discuss individuals' questions. And here it does, because this is so ridiculous, sort of. How is it possible that we're not going to plan for an entire year and we're going to survive? The Chisoimru, Ma Noichal Bashana Hashvius. And if you're going to ask, what are we going to eat in the seventh year? We're not planting, we're not plowing. So the Torah says, "Vitzivisi es berchosi lochem bashana hashishis," which incidentally, this year that we're in now, Tavshin Samach Zion, is a shana hashishis. Next year is a shnas hashmitah, Tavshin Samach Ches, and preparations for it are starting already now, because there are many halachas that already begin a few months prior to the shmitah year. So the pasuk says, "I command my blessing to you in the sixth year, and whatever will grow the sixth year will grow with such bracha, such an abundance that it'll last for the sixth year, and for the seventh year, into the eighth year, because you can't start planting until the eighth year. Whatever you're going to plant the eighth year, you're not going to be able to eat until later on. So we need like sort of a good 2.5 years of bracha, and the Torah promises us that if you keep to the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, you will not starve, as it has been proven even recently and documented. Those who observed Shemitah properly, even in recent years, can attest to. So in order to observe these halachas, there's no question that what's required is a tremendous level of emunah and betochim. Not just emunah, but even more than that. Not just belief, but faith. Total faith in Hashem. As we read in the Haftarah this week, the Haftarah is always a summation, always connected to the parasha. One might ask, what does this pasuk have to do with this week's parasha? Baruch HaGever Asher Yiftach BaHashem V'Hoya Hashem Miftachay. Of course there's a connection, because this pasuk speaks to us about Betachayin, and that one who puts his faith in Hashem is blessed. On the other hand, Arur HaGever Asher Yiftach BaAdam. What's Baruch HaGever Asher Yiftach BaHashem doing here? What's required to observe the laws of Shemitah and Yovel? And both parashas are talking about this, because the parasha of the Teichacha is also punishment for those who don't keep to the laws of Shemitah, is betochah. In fact, what's the reward for keeping Shemitah, says the pasuk? Vishaftem al ha'oretz lovetach. You will live in the land securely, confident. You will not have to worry about any terrorist attacks. You will not have to worry about any impending disasters, any wars. Betach. Betach means, in the Hebrew, it means sure, betach. But betach, in Lashon HaKodesh, betach means confident. I could sleep at night. The pasuk says, Vishaftem lovetach ba'artzachem, v'nosati sholom ba'aretz, u'shechaftem ve'ein machru. You'll be able to sleep at night and you won't be scared. Which I don't know if we could say today. But that's the bracha for observing Shemitah. Vishaftem al ha'oretz lovetach. Why? Because what's required to observe Shemitah is betachen. The reward therefore is, you have betachen in Hashem, you'll be able to live in the land lovetach. This we always read in the month of Iyar. The month of Iyar is the month, as we mentioned last week, that the Mun came down. The Mun came down in the fifth week of Sfira. According to many, the Mun started falling from the sky on Lag BaOmer, as the Chassam Sofer writes. The Gemara actually says that it was the 16th of Iyar, but it was this week, the fifth week of Sfira, which comes to a close now. the month of Iyar. The month of Iyar was designated as the month for us receiving the month for the first time. The month was also given to us to teach us betachen. The month taught us betachen in a very, very clear way, because you were not allowed to leave over from one day to the next. That was a requirement in the eating of the month. Hineni mamtir lachem lecha min hashamayim, the pasuk says, I will give you food from the heavens. And the pasuk says, l'man anasenu, I'm going to test the Jewish people to see how yeleich b'soy rasiyim, if they're going to follow in my Torah. What does eating the month have to do with following the laws of the Torah? Rashi tells us there are specific requirements that must be fulfilled in order for the month to be eaten, and that is that no one is to leave over any month for the next day, and not to go out on Shabbos to gather. Dvar yoyim b'yoyimai, the pasuk says, each day for that day. That means when the day is over, there's nothing left. There's not a morsel of mun left in the home. Why is that necessary? For what? What's the purpose? What does that teach us? Imagine today that everyone makes sure that when the day is over, there's not nothing left in the refrigerator. Why would that be important? What's important is at that time Hashem was instilling in us, He was infusing in us to have total reliance, total faith in Him. Not to worry what's going to be tomorrow. Tomorrow there's going to be mun again. Don't leave over any mun, because if you do, that means you're still not sure. Maybe tomorrow Hashem won't provide us. That was the level of betachon they reached in those days, which is difficult today. We don't have mun from Shemayim, even though we have to understand that parnasa is mun min Hashemayim. Our livelihood, what the money that we make, is mun min Hashemayim. We have to understand it comes straight from Hashem. And if a person was really on the proper level of betachon, you don't have to worry about tomorrow. Certainly not about what's going to be in 10 years from now. Real betachon is total reliance on Hashem. He took care of me today, He's going to take care of me tomorrow. No one was allowed to leave over mun. And those who did, Dasan and Aviram, who did, we know what happened to that mun. The next day, it rotted, it spoiled. Miraculously so, because that same month they left over from Friday to Shabbos, it did not spoil. So the same Hashem who declared that the month should rot, declared that at certain times it doesn't rot. From Friday to Shabbos or to Yom Tov, it doesn't. From Sunday to Monday, it does if you leave over. And having the month these few weeks before Matan Torah infused in them this midah of betachon and prepare them to receive the Torah. It was necessary, it was a requirement for them to receive the Torah on Har Sinai, that they should be totally reliant on Hashem, but totally batuach b'Hashem. And therefore, the Gemara says, "Lo nitna Torah ela la'ochlei haman." The Torah was only given to those who ate the man. We know that. They had nothing else to eat. In fact, the day before the man came down, they had just finished, they just used up the matzah that they took out of Mitzrayim. The matzah that they took out of Mitzrayim miraculously lasted them for a month, as Rashi tells us in B'Shalach. So they were already living a supernatural life. There was no food in the desert. There are no grocery stores in the wilderness. There were no trees, no fruits and vegetables, and they certainly weren't going to feed millions of people with cactus or whatever they had in the wilderness. When they what they were eating matzah every day, and they realized Hashem obviously is providing us supernaturally, but the matzah just doesn't get used up. It was like the oil of Hanukkah. And then suddenly there's no matzah. And also they look around them, and there are no trees, and there are no grocery stores. So al pi teva, they're all going to starve to death. There is no way that millions of people are going to be able to survive this. There is no way that we're going to have food tomorrow. And many of them complained. And we can understand why they complained. Why should they expect mun to come down from the heavens? It never happened in history yet. It's only going to happen in the future. The Gemara says, the mun is the Meichel of Tzadikim La'osud Lavoi, not now. But real betachen is that you put your faith in Hashem that even the impossible could happen. You never give up. And that's what they saw. The next day, lechem came min hashamayim. And they got so used to it for 40 years that when they came to Eretz Yisrael, they were surprised to see that food does come out of the ground too. They were so used to that lechem comes from shamayim, they forgot that really lechem is min ha'aretz. And water comes from the heavens. They, by them it was topsy-turvy. They got water from the ground. The well of Miriam was a rock that rolled with them throughout their 40-year journey in the desert. So they got water from a rock, and they got food from the heavens. It took time to get used to the fact that food really in this world grows from the ground, and water comes from the sky.
How does this strive for the
Ein Somech Menanes? Ein Somech Menanes, when Teva is a possibility. There was no possibility for Teva here. Of course we don't rely on a Nes. Right. Of course we have to go to work. And of course you can't wake up and say, I'm not going to work anymore, I expect food to fly in the window. No. There has to be hishtadlis, no question about it. but you still have betachon in Hashem. I don't have to worry what's going to be in 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 30 years from now. I have a shtadlus, definitely. There was no possibility to have a shtadlus then. Where are they going? And that's, Hashem wanted to infuse them this very high level of betachon, that when they will enter the land, and they will cultivate and farm and live normal lives, and then, like you said, ein soimich al hanes, but they'll still understand what betachon is. But in the desert, it wasn't a nest, it wasn't ein soimich al hanes. Either you believed in Hashem or you didn't, because if you don't have betachon, and if the man did not come down from Shemayim, they would have starved to death. Because there's nothing else to do. They had to rely on it. Right? And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu promised them. And when he took them out of Mitzrayim, they knew that they're going to have to live some sort of miraculous life here, because there's no food, there's no water. They were protected by the clouds, so there, that was necessary. That happened in the month of Iyar. We read in Iyar now, in the Har B'Chukosai, about observing Shemitah and Yovel, which in order to keep the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, it also requires, even today, that requires tremendous betachon. If you tell anyone today, don't plant and plow for a year and expect what's going to grow now to last for 2 years, How can you say that? But the Torah says even now, but Tzivisias Birchasi Lofem, Shemitah, there's a machalikas, Shemitah today is Midai Raisa, Midai Rabbanan. But there are those who observe it today. Of course, there are Heterim, there are ways out if you want to sell it to a guy, whatever they do today. But Lamai said there are many, many, and I think next year even more than ever probably, that are going to observe and do observe the laws of Shemitah. And no one starves to death as a result. Shemitah is a mitzvah that infuses in us this level of betachon, similar to that the man brought about in the desert. And therefore, as we prepare for Matan Torah now, they prepare then with the man. We prepare now with the parashiyos that we read during this time. We learn about Shemitah and Yovel. And even if we are not observing Shemitah here in America, but the mitzvah of Shemitah teaches us emuna and betachon. In fact, David HaMelech says in Tehillim, kol mitzvah yisecha emuna, all your mitzvahs are emuna. Every mitzvah is supposed to bring us to a higher level of emuna, and that's the goal. That's when we came to Har Sinai. That's what we first heard from Hashem. Anoichi Hashem Elokech Asher Hoitzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. That I am Hashem. Ato Hareisol Adaski Hashem Hu Ho Elokim Ein Oid Mulvado. And there's nothing else. There's no one else. There's nothing else. And everything is from Him. And that's what we have to work on and develop during the days of Sfira. What is Sfira? We count every day, but only one day. You don't count today for tomorrow. Usfartam lachem mimacharas haShabbos miyom aviyachem esayim ratanu for shavas habasayis tamimayis tehiyana. And as we know, every night you make a bracha just for that day. You can't count tonight for tomorrow night. And if you miss a day, you can't count anymore with a bracha for 24 hours passes. It's each day, like by the month. Dvar yom biyom. Sfira teaches us to concentrate on our daily lives, day by day. Today I have to do what I have to do. Today is important, not yesterday and not tomorrow. Hayoyim im b'koyloi sushmo, the pasuk says. Today, a person has to adhere to that which Hashem wants from us. If we would really live that way and realize that every day has its specific mission, as the Zohar writes, kol yoyim v'yoyim avir avidite, every day has its specific accomplishment. Every day was created by Hashem, and every day, every Jew, every person who's living today has his specific mission and goal that he has to accomplish on this specific day. Yes, we do have to worry about what's going to be tomorrow, perhaps, in certain things we have to be concerned with. Obviously, you have to prepare for Shabbos, you have to prepare. Certainly, a person has to prepare and go through the hishtadlus of life. But day by day, a person has to be concerned just with that day. Sfira teaches that. Amalek says the opposite. Amalek, who we battled also during this time, as mentioned last week in a different vein. Melchemes Amalek happened also in these weeks. Melchemes Amalek, in fact, happened right after they received the man. They were on such a high level and they were being infused with such betachon and emunah. That's when Amalek comes. And Amalek comes to give them doubts. Amalek, as we know, is begematria safek, as the Sfarim tell us. Amalek is equal to the word safek, which safek means doubt. Doubts. Is it really true? You really think it? You think Hashem really does watch over you in every respect? Yeah, there is a God, but he's not so involved. Any safek that we could possibly have. Hayayish Hashem bikribeinu im oyin. And what does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Say he molek, he lochem ba Amalek mochar. Go fight Amalek tomorrow. What does that mean? Go fight Amalek who says that you have to be concerned about tomorrow. Not today. You've got to worry about tomorrow. And Amalek says that, you know, you have to map out your whole life. You can't rely on God. You can't rely on Hashem. You have to know exactly what you're going to do. And you have to be ready for the next 30 years. Hayom in b'koylei sushmo. We say it all in Shema. Asher anoichi mitzavecha hayom. Today. I don't have to worry about tomorrow. The only tomorrow I have to worry about is olam haba. Mocha la'achazman. Amalek says, no, what do you mean? You got to map out your life. You can't rely on Hashem. That's Amalek. That's why the man, eating the man and observing the laws of the man, negates Amalek. Observing Shemitah and Yovel and having total reliance, Emunah and Betachon and Hashem, is the way we fight Amalek. Behar B'chu Kaisai are Parshias numbers 32 and 33 in the order of the Parshias of the Torah. Right? There are 54 Parshias in the Chumash. Behar is 32, B'chu Kaisai is 33. We are in the week of Lag B'Omer. Even though Lag B'Omer is past, and today we were in the 35th day, we're now completing the 5th week, the great week of Hod, to the 5th week of Sfira, which the Zohar says is the week that the gates of Shemayim are open. So it's coming to a close now. It's like Ne'ilan Yom Kippur. Just like the Mun was the opening of the gates of heaven, the Mabel, which as we mentioned last week, the Mabel also happened this week according to Rabbi Hoshua, the gates of heaven opened up. This is the week of Lag B'Omer, the 33rd day, the day that Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai revealed the secrets of the Torah that Mashiach is going to reveal. He began revealing that which is going to be revealed to us in the future. The concept of revelation is an opening of something which is closed. The part of the Torah that is closed today, the part of the Torah that's compared to Shamayim, the Nistar part of Torah, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai began revealing on the day that he passed away. And as the Zohar itself writes, the day wasn't long enough, and Hashem made the day longer, just like it happened by Melchemes HaMolech. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu stopped the sun in its tracks. Yeshua ben Nun did that in the war with Givon and Sefer Yehoshua as well. The day was prolonged in order that Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai could finish revealing what he wanted to reveal. Unlike Zayin Adar, which Zayin Adar is known as a sad day, a day that we fast as a time of tzaddikim on Zayin Adar, even though it's also the passing of a great tzaddik Moshe Rabbeinu, but not like Lag B'Omer, because the day that Moshe was nifter, the Gemara says 3,000 halachas were forgotten. So Zayin Adar is associated with Shikha, with Shikhas HaTorah, and therefore it was a day of Avelis, in contrast to Lag B'Omer, which is a very joyous day by everyone, practically. One who goes to Miron today, or you see the videos of what's going on there, and every segment, every kind of Jew is there, from Haredi to totally unaffiliated. That's the greatness of this day. The day of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Torah was not forgotten. On the contrary, it was a day that a lot of Torah was revealed. In fact, it was Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai who made the promise that the Torah will never be forgotten. There's an opinion in the Gemara that the Torah will be forgotten before Mashiach comes. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is the one who said, Chas v'shalom, loy tishtakach Torah mi Yisrael. The Torah will never be forgotten. And he quotes the pasuk ki loy si shochach mi pi zari, which the last letters is Yochai, Yud Vav Ches Aleph Yud, the name of his father. Loy si shochach mi pi zari, the Torah will never be forgotten. The Reishis Bara Elohim, Hashem created the world for the Torah and for Klal Yisrael to observe it. How could the Torah be forgotten? Loy si shochach mi pi zari is begamatria bereishis Bara Elohim. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai is the one who revealed this, and the day he passed away, it was clear the Torah is not going to be forgotten. And his last words were Kisham Siva Hashem es Habracha Chayim. Before he had the chance to say the word Chayim, which is in Tehillim, that pasuk, he was nostalgic. And that day remained as a day of hope. Hoyt Shabahoy, the 5th day of the 5th week of Sfira, the 33rd day of the Sfira, which the number 33, as we've been speaking about in the last few weeks, is a number that is associated with the future. And that's why in the 33rd parasha of Chumash, which is Bichu Kaisai, which Lag B'Omer usually falls out of the week of Behar B'chu Kaisai, as it did this year, Sunday of the week, Behar B'chu Kaisai. And B'chu Kaisai is parasha number 33. This parasha discusses the brachos that most Rishonim say is referring to Yemos HaMashiach. Because really, if you look through it, it didn't really happen yet. What it says here is going to happen. Some will say that various brachos here did occur, but most of these brachos are futuristic. And Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai lived such a life. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai was Teirosai Imnosai. He didn't have to work for a living. By him, it was like Yemos HaMashiach. He was an Neshama of Mashiach. So in his time, he lived a life of the way it's going to be in the future. That's why he is Nifter on the 33rd, Lag, Gal, which Gal means to reveal. He lived a life of revelation. And what's interesting is the Teichacha in Parshas B'chu Kaisai has 33 Psukim to. And that's strange, because this is the 33rd Parsha associated with Yemos HaMashiach. What's the Teichacha doing in Parshas B'chu Kaisai? You also notice that B'chu Kaisai does not start with a Vav. Im B'chu Kaisai Teilech. There's no Vav. Almost every Parsha in Chumash begins with a Vav, because every Parsha is connected to the Parsha before. And you would think, especially Behar B'chu Kaisai, these two usually go together. Should have said V'im B'chu Kaisai. The fact that it doesn't start with a Vav means it's disconnected from the previous Parsha. It's a new Parsha, new revelation. Yemais HaMashiach, La'asid Lavoi, La'asid Lavoi, Begamatria Shimon Ben Yochai. This, the 33rd parasha of Chumash is connected to the future. Therefore, it is not connected to the previous parashas. In fact, we take a look at Bahar, we learn about the lowest Jew. Parashas Bahar ends with a Jew who is sold to a Goy. And it's such a terrible description the Torah describes to us here. He's being sold to someone who's an idol worshipper. It's hard to imagine this, but Rashi quotes over here that the Torah says, Loisasu lachem elilim. Don't worship idols, something which we know already. So Rashi says, we're talking about a Jew who was sold to a Goy who is an idol worshipper. So maybe he thinks, since my master is an idol worshipper, so can I. My master is Machal Shabbos, so can I. My master is an adulterer, my master is immoral, so I can be that way too. There is even such a Havamina. Therefore, the Pasuk has to tell us, no, you can't. So we're talking about a Jew who's sunken so low. He's living by a guy, he's enslaved to a guy, that he even has thoughts that perhaps he's allowed to be like a guy. And that's how Parshas Bahar, the 32nd Parsha of Chumash, ends. Is there hope for a Jew like that? Yes, there is. Says the Pasuk, even such a Jew, v'yotza b'shnas hayoyvel, he goes out in the 50th year. The 50th year, the Jubilee year, that's the year that frees everyone. Even the lowest Jew has a tikkun. Every neshama will be rectified. Ki lo yidach mimenu nidach, the Pasuk says in Shmuel. Every single Jew will be rectified, will reach a tikkun. Yovel is the year that is associated with tikkun, when everyone comes home. That's Shavuos. Shavuos, everyone comes home. Every single Jew was by Har Sinai, by Yichan Shom Yisrael Neged Ahar. One of the requirements for the Yovel observance is every single Jew has to be there. That's why we haven't had Yovel for the longest time. The last time there was a Yovel year was 45 years before Churban Bayis Rishon, because after that, there was never a time, until Mashiach will come, when all Jews will be living in Eretz Yisrael. And in order to observe the laws of Yovel, the Pasuk says, Ukrosem Deroyer Ba'oretz L'chol Yoshevehah, says the Gemara in Erechim, Bizman She'kol Yoshevehah Oleho. Everyone has to be there. Just as every single Jew was by Har Sinai. And if not for that, the Torah would not have been given. The Torah could not be given if one Jew was missing, like if one letter is missing in the Sefer Torah. The same with Yovel, the observance of the laws of Yovel cannot take place unless all Jews are present. And all Jews means all Jews. Kol Yisrael yesh lehem chelek l'olam haba. Even those that have fallen and that have sinned and have reached the lowest levels, as we, even those that we see today, even assimilated Jews, those that have fallen into the Shar Hanun of Tumah, there's a tikkun rectification for them too, especially on Lag BaOmer. That's why the next parasha does not start with a vav. It's a new beginning. That's that Jew, the Yovel frees him, he starts over again. In B'chukaisai Teilechu, you accept the Torah upon yourself anew, you're a new person, it's like you're being born again Jew, and you start over. It doesn't matter what happened. And that's what Shavuos is all about. On Shavuos, everyone was healed. No more ailments. The blind were healed, the deaf, the mute. The Pasuk says so, Rashi brings it in the Chumash, literal understanding of the Pesukim. There were no sick people. Every Jew was healed. That's Iyar. Iyar is Ani Hashem Roifecha. This is the month that we work on healing our midos, rectifying our character, the character traits. That's what the 7 weeks of Sphere correspond to, the 7 midos. And the goal is to come Shavuos healthy, which everyone receives a Refuah Shalema. And this we see in Rus. We lame Rus on Shavuos. And Rus, we talk about two individuals, Machloin and Kilyon. Those are the two who left Eretz Yisrael with their father and mother, married non-Jews. They sinned, first of all, they left Eretz Yisrael. They were greedy, they didn't want to share their wealth with the poor, as Rashi tells us in Rus, based on the Midrashim. And they married, Vayisu lehem noshim mayavias. They were tzaddikim, obviously there must have been Megayer then, but Chazal said it wasn't a Geirus Kahalacha, it wasn't a proper Geirus. They were also Mayavias. At that time, the Halacha of Mayavi V'lei Mayavis was concealed. They didn't know that yet. So they really had no right to marry Moabite woman. And they died. The Pasuk says. They passed away, and they lost all their wealth, and before that, and they passed away, and Elimelech dies, and Machlon dies, and Kilion dies, and the Naomi leaves with Rus and Arpa, and Arpa leaves and goes back home, because she never intended to convert anyway, and Rus and Naomi return to Eretz Yisrael, to Eretz Yehuda, and as we know the whole story, Rus marries Boaz, and the Pesukim tell us that by Boaz marrying Rus, it was sort of an observance of Yibum, those who are starting Yevamos this week, which the whole concept of Yibum is Tikkun HaNefesh. What's the purpose of the Yibum? The Yibum is a man dies without children, it says in the Zohar, a man who dies without children has a hard time in Gan Eden. But when his brother marries his ex-wife, his brother marries his widow, his neshama has a tikkun, and then he goes into Gan Eden. And as the Sfarim tell us, all of them say the same thing. All the Kadmonim and the Rishonim who write about Rus, that Machloin was the neshama of Oyved. When Rus married Bayaz, and it was only for one night, and as Chazal tell us, it was on Shavasa B'Tamuz. That's when Rus married Bayaz. The Shavasa B'Tamuz, the future date of tragedy, was originally the day that the neshama of Mashiach was being implanted in Rus. Hashem was preparing the remedy before the wound. That's when Machloin is being rectified. Meshiv Nefesh. Machloin's neshama returns to earth as Oyved. The child of Rus is the neshama of Machloin. That's what Yibam is all about. Yibam is to be Masaka in the neshama. Even the nefesh of Machloin, one thinks Machloin from the word Machla, which means sickness. He's a sick individual. He's spiritually sick. He's healed. Machla comes from the word also Mechila. Machloin, he receives Mechilas Havoinos. Machl Nun. Machl is Rosh HaTevis. V'hikrafta mincha chadosha laHashem. Shavuos, you become a new person, and the Machloin receives Mechilas Havoinos. What about Kilyon? Now, Kilyon, most say, did not, because Kilyon was married to Arpah. Arpah left, so therefore there's no tikkun for Kilyon. Kilyon comes from the word Kiloyon, which Kiloyon means there's nothing. Kiloyon means totally destroyed, obliterated. However, there are Kadmoinim who say not the case at all, because Rus, after Machloin died, married Kilyon. Many Rishonim say this. Kilyon married Rus after Machloin died, with the side of Yibam. So it comes out that Rus was married to Kilyon and to Machloin. And that's why at the end of the story, we read that when Boaz takes Rus as his wife and he redeems the field, which is a topic which is discussed in this week's parasha, Geulas Haoretz, the concept of redemption, the concept of Yovel, the Pasuk says that Boaz says to the elders and to those who were there, Eidem Atem Hayoim, you are all witnesses that I bought everything that belongs to Elimelech, Ve'eis Kol Asher L'Chilyoin U'Machloin. Who's talking about Kilyoin here? Why is Kilyoin being mentioned here? And another interesting thing, before this the Pasuk says, Rus Hamoyavia Eishas Hameis, Rus the Moabite, the wife of the dead man. And then after Boaz marries her, for the first time the Torah reveals who Rus's husband was. Doesn't say till the end of the story. The Gamesh, we know that Machlon and Kilyon married Arpa and Rus, but it never says clearly who married who. After Boaz marries Rus, and now there's a tikkun for the neshama of Machlon, the Gamesh Rus Hamoyavia Eishas Machlon, the Pasuk. The Pasuk reveals to us now that she was married to Machlon. Until now, the Torah kept it hidden. She's known as the wife of the dead man, because he was dead. He was dead. Now he sort of goes through Tchias Hameisim. He's being resurrected. His neshama comes back to life. He's receiving a tikkun. And Kilyon also, because since Kilyon also married Rus, so now that Rus marries Boaz, that child is a fusion of the neshamas of Kilyon and Machloin. And what's interesting too, is the whole Soid Hayibim is where Malchus Beis David begins. Malchus Beis David starts in Parshas Vayeshev when Yehuda marries Tamar. Tamar married Yehuda also beside Hayibim. It was a concept of Yibim, because he was the closest relative after she lost her two husbands, Er and Einan. And we know there's a rule in the Gemara, according to one opinion, if a woman lost two husbands, you don't let her marry a third, because you're afraid that she's called a katlonis. So that's why it says here that when they blessed Rus and Boaz, they say, you should vihi beischa kebeis peretz asher yolda Tamar liYehuda. Why are they imagining Tamar and Yehuda here? Because Tamar lived with Aaron and Einan, and they both died, but Yehuda married her anyway. And look who came out of her. Peretz. And from Peretz comes Boaz and Oyved and David and Mashiach. So don't worry about the fact that Rus was married to Machlon and Kilyon, and they both died. Don't worry. She'll have a child, and that from that child will come Mashiach. The truth is, Boaz did die that night. Boaz did. That's the interesting thing. He really did die that night. I don't know what they said the next morning, but the fact of the matter is, we all know that from that union comes David HaMelech, comes Mashiach. Ve'oived hoyledes Yishai. Machloin becomes Oived. Machloin, which means Machla, becomes Oived, Oived Hashem, which is what we're supposed to be doing right now, working on Avdus. Ki li b'nei Yisrael avodim avodayhem, in this week's parasha. Noichi Hashem alekech hasho'et seisichom eretz Mitzrayim, mi beis avodim. Do not be slaves to anyone else but to Hashem. To be an Oived Hashem. Ve'oived hoyledes Yishai. Yishai is the Mepharshim say, comes from the word Yesh. Call Yisrael Yesh Lehem Chelek Lo'olam Haba. Yesh, the Shin Yud, the 310 worlds that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give to every tzaddik in the future. If you're an Oyver Hashem, then you get Yishai, you get Yesh Yud. You get the Shin Yud Olamites. The Yishai Hoyler as David. This we read Shavuos, because Shavuos is a day of Tikkun Torah Hashem Tamima Meshivas Nefesh. The Torah has the power to return every nefesh to its source, to its root. And by us being mekabel on ourselves now, the oil Torah in B'chukai Sai Teilechu, as Rashi says, the Shetiva Amelim B'Torah, we can start anew. It's a new beginning. The parasha is not attached to the parasha before. Yet these two parshas go together, Bahar B'chukai Sai, which in Bahar, the lowest Jew also receives a tikkun. He goes out in the Yovel year, in the 50th year, and starts anew. And the Lamed Gimel, the 33 brachas, the 33 psukim of Teichach are really brachas. We know that the Teichach are really brachas in disguise. Rabbi Shimon ben Yechai, if anyone, he was the one, the Gemara even says in the Ma'ariv Katan, that he once said what looked like klolos, really what they were brachas in disguise. Rabbi Shimon ben Yechai is the neshama of Panemius. The Panemius of all the klolos are really brachas. And that's why Birchas Yaakov also has 33 psukim. Birchas Yaakov and Parshas Vayechi. And that's what Mashiach will accomplish, is he will turn all the klolos into brachas. The Teichacha will become brachas, and we'll see that all the tragedies and all these sad events and all that what we consider terrible, and all the, and it is terrible today, whatever we see today will all turn, the Nahapach will all turn into brachas, and then we'll see that really the Pnimis, they were all brachas, and we'll be zeichet to what the Pasuk says here, V'nasati Shalom V'Ors, real peace, U'shchaftem V'ein Macharit, will be able to sleep at night, not have to worry about any, God forbid, any terrorist attacks, V'shbati Chaya Ram in Ha'orets, not only wild beasts, literally, but those who act like wild beasts, Yishmael and the likes, and we should be zeichet to be as HaMashiach and to the Yovel HaGadol, Yitokah B'Shoif HaGadol, Levoha, Oivna Be'eretz Ashur, V'Hanidochim, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, V'Hishtachavu LaHashem Behar, Behar HaKodesh, B'Yerushalayim.